Welcome to On Tap with Corey and Ira, where they discuss Southern Minnesota breweries and beer. Here's your host, Corey Butler and Ira Carlson.
Hello and welcome to episode number 51 of On Tap with Corey and Ira, your bi-weekly exploration of all things Southern Minnesota breweries and beer. Although this week we once again take a tour up to Duluth for our third of four stops. I'm one half of your co-host, Corey Butler.
And I guess I'm the other half, Ira Carlson.
And Ira, where'd we stop for this show?
We end up stopping a little bit right downtown Duluth, Blacklist Artisan Ales, kind of a one that is not new to the scene, but newer to the Duluth scene, I should say. You know, there's a
well, it's no Fickers or Lake Superior. Right, it's not 20 years of pedigree, right?
Duluth has a little bit of history up there.
A little bit.
So Blacklist falls in the newer category of that, but they've been around for a little while. And we had a chance to stop in and talk to John, one of the co-owners. He's kind of his role is more in the marketing department for Blacklist. But yeah, we had a great chance to stop in and visit them. It's really kind of a unique space downtown Duluth. You'll find out later about where it's located. It's pretty close to obviously Canal Park area and stuff.
A little history in their space.
Yeah, but there's some history.
We'll call that a teaser.
Yeah, well, a teaser to that and stuff. But no, we had a nice chance to stop down and enjoy some beers, a little bit of Spruce Tip IPA and a few other beers that kind of jump out at you and stuff.
Belgian focus for those guys.
Yeah, it's definitely a nice Belgian focus, which mixes well with some of the other breweries we talked to.
Belgian European, I'd say. They've kind of moved away a little bit
from that. But it blends well with the other breweries in that area and stuff because a unique space with some unique beers and stuff. So, yes, a very nice, fun visit. But after we got done talking to them, we also have, of course, a couple of beers of the week brought to us this week by Firehouse Liquor. And, of course, a style of the week brought to us by Andrew Burns. So it's, as I like to call, a fun show.
A fun show. And it was a great conversation with John. A lot of knowledge there. A lot of respect for the industry. Obviously, as a owner of a brewery, one of the co-owners of Blacklist, had a lot to say. It was a great conversation. Beautiful space. You should listen to catch that conversation because there's a lot of cool things to learn about the space, learn about the company, learn about the beer. A lot of really good things going up in Duluth, specifically Blacklist, but also Duluth at large. I mean, this is obviously our third of fourth shows. There's plenty to talk about up in Duluth, a great destination for any of those folks who like craft brewing and other things. There's cidery and meat and all sorts of craft products to have in Duluth. And as Duluth was a destination for us, Northfield's a destination for many. And one of those shining stars of Northfield is KYMN Radio, where you're listening to us live, 95.1 FM, 1080 AM. We appreciate you tuning in here to us live. If you're not listening to us live, it means you're probably listening to us on kymnradio.net or ontapnorfield.com or on the number of podcast platforms like iTunes, Google Play, Player FM, iHeartRadio, a number of places where you can catch our prior 50 shows. It's a big deal for us. We made 51.
That's kind of
now.
A big number to be saying.
I'm losing count. Like, I have to, like, reference our spreadsheet. Like, what number are we on? This is episode 51. That means we've done 50 shows prior to this, so appreciate the support from 95.1 FM, The One, and KYMRadio.net for supporting us there. And if you want to keep up with what's going on with us, we're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Look for On Tap Northfield. You can find photos and videos and updates about where we are, what we're drinking, who we're hanging out with. We get out occasionally, and most of those are in southern Minnesota, but sometimes we head out of our jurisdiction. I was on a recent trip where I brought back some beer, and Ira was up in St. Paul recently, so that's always kind of fun to see where we're at and kind of what we're experiencing. Facebook also is a good place to find out who's coming up on the show in the coming weeks. We've got that built out into the spring. And hopefully beyond soon, it's depending on how quickly I work here. We've got a great show coming up with Blacklist Artisan Ales. We appreciate their time. Stick around. We've got a good one coming up.
And now time for Beers of the Week, brought to us this week by Firehouse Liquor of Dundas. Our first offering is coming out of Elysian. It's their Def Leppard Pale. those of you who know Legion, a lot of you have probably seen Space Dust. It's kind of been a pretty popular beer being pushed out around the world and stuff.
We should say Legion Brewing Company, not Legion, Minnesota.
Yes, yeah. Yeah,
just to avoid some confusion.
We have had Legion on before, and yes, we'd made that distinction, but I probably should say that again. Yes, it's out of
we are Seattle. Southern Minnesota.
Right? I believe it's Seattle, Washington, that Legion Brewing Company Seattle. Is out of, but... they're a little bit of a bigger beer company, but this one I absolutely love because, of course, it's got a little Def Leppard tie into it. I'm kind
pour
of
some sugar on me.
I'm an 80s hair metal kind of guy, and this can has got me at day one because you know why? This can, for you younger people,
it's
like
a sharp looking can.
Yes, but it is. It's basically a take on the 1987 Hysteria album. And because of it, I made we had a small break before we recorded this. And,
like I was going to say, you made me.
Yeah,
well, no, I enjoyed Def Leppard.
Right, but
we had a little breakout session.
We had a little breakout session, and we started having a little bit of fun with this. And I started going through the Hysteria album. So, Kevin Engelby, if you're listening, shout out to you and your Dodge van and our trips to Cannon Falls.
That doesn't sound creepy at all.
Yeah. Well, it might have been back in the day, but
then we led your Def Leppard into me saying, "Hey, I got a Brian Adams Christmas song."
That being
for
said,
you
it was the
to.
summer of '88, you know, which actually would go really well with Brian Adams, as you were just talking about.
Yeah,
it's
19 years off, but that's all right.
Well, no, but Brian Adams had the summer of '69.
19 years.
Yeah. Well, no, but
math.
Yeah. Anyways, we digress.
But we digress.
To get to the actual beer, I mean, Elysian does some bigger, bolder beers. That being said, this pale ale comes in kind of on a subtler side. It's got a nice bitterness to it. It's still definitely a pale ale, really nice flavor. Trying to figure out what song off the Hysteria album I'd put this with it.
I think you said Love Hurts, right?
Yeah. Well,
or Love Bites. Love Bites.
Yeah. I know, but there's still that little bit of animal, you know. I don't know. There's a lot to it, yeah. So I'll go back to the can real quick, then I'll pass it back to you. But Def Leppard Pale Ale, two fanatics of their craft. Def Leppard and Legion have joined forces to bring you a collision of legendary British ale with Northwestern hops. Can you handle it? So, yes, it's a little...
Too hot to handle.
Right. It's not a hazy IPA, but it's a Northwest pale ale. Definitely a very good beer. I like this one.
I like it as well. I mean, it's a nice pale, and that bitterness really kind of sits in your throat a little bit. You know, it's kind of slow to rise on the front end, but it sits in your throat and kind of lets you know, hey, I'm a big, bold pale. And so, I like it, but I gave it 10 out of 10 on marketing.
Oh, yeah.
They nailed it on the marketing end. So it's nice when you're a bigger beer company because they are owned by one of the big beers.
Well, and I gotta figure Def Leppard's getting a takeoff. And if we just
no doubt.
We just sat there and played like four songs off of Spotify and they got their little cut off Spotify. So, you know, just simply look at a can, we start playing Def Leppard. I think they hit their mark on that.
There's no way AB InBev made this beer without consulting with their folks. I think management was involved in creating this beer. But that said, nice beer, outstanding marketing.
Yes, very much so.
Our second beer is going to be from Shiner. They're down in Texas, so we've had a couple of their beers on here before. This is their Wicked Juicy IPA. So not a huge beer, comes at 5.7 ABV. So it says making your own squeeze. So it's basically a juicy IPA, some fruit, tropical hops coming through. You know, the thing I pull from it, and it's not a flavor I'm really that fond of, is I get a lot of grapefruit from it. Makes me think of kind of like grapefruit juice. It's kind of got that bitter fruitiness to it. It's okay. I mean, what I think of when I think of Shiner is I think it's their Holiday Cheer winter lager.
I'm a Shinerbach kind of guy.
Not a big Shinerbach. So I might have got some of those words wrong, but they have a Christmas beer or a winter beer that I think is pretty decent.
I think we talked about it less over a year ago, but we did have the Christmas beer.
Did we?
Yeah.
Okay.
We did.
So I think that's okay. I haven't had it for a while, probably since then.
Yep.
But this is their Wicked Juicy IPA. It's okay. It's not the greatest beer I've had. Appreciate Sean sending it over for us to try it. But I think for the juiciness, the fruit isn't my preferred fruit. I get grapefruit from it. I don't know what you get, but it's definitely that kind of bitter fruit where you got the rind and just it's.
I get more of a melon, but again, I'm not a melon or a grapefruit person, so yeah, it doesn't quite hit the mark for me. It's definitely juicy.
Mm-hmm.
It's got some tart and some citrus to it, but maybe not quite what it's going to do, but I think I'd go relive my childhood with, well, maybe not childhood, but I might go back and I might go back and relive some other stuff with the Def Leppard. And sadly enough, I might be a product of the marketing. I kind of really like the Def Leppard beer just for the fact that it brought back a lot of memories. You know, now if I can get a poison beer, that
wow.
Yeah, maybe, all right. The terminology for that might be
we
wrong,
did have but, a blackberry yeah. brandy beer on not too long ago. That might qualify.
Well, I was thinking more of like you know like look what the cat dragged in beer or something like that. You know, I might be all in on that one, but
Panama beer that might be good.
Yeah. Oh yeah. There you go. Got Let's a little Van Halen, Van Halen reference yeah. there to you.
No so. Van Hagard, just yeah. Van Halen. So I'm known as the fruit guy, the tropical fruit guy. Grapefruit's not one of those fruits I like.
Yeah.
So it's okay. If you want to go try it, though, you definitely should try it. If you like grapefruit or you're a Shiner fan, it's definitely available in the area.
Yeah, and I think there's a bit of a difference between these two beers today, so it's up to you to make your choice. And so if you want to make your choice, head on over to Firehouse Liquor. You can try either of those beers we tried today or any of the other beers we've tried on previous shows. They're conveniently found south on Highway 3 in Dundas.
Look for the fire truck. Here we are, number three on the stop of our winter tour here. We're hanging out with John Loss at Black List Artisan Ales in Duluth, Minnesota. John, how's it going?
Doing very well. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, appreciate you having us. We're having a fun day so far. This is obviously airing a few weeks after our first and second show. There we go, second show. So the day's adding up already, but here we are, number three. Black List Artisan Ales, where can people find that in Duluth?
Well, you know, right at the tap room is a great spot to start at 120 East Superior Street. So right downtown in a rather notorious former building known as the Last Place on Earth.
Yeah, we're going to get into that, I think, a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not too in-depth.
But then, you know, we have accounts all around on sale and then at most of the liquor stores, you know, probably about 100 or so counts down in the cities as well.
Through the cities. I think you're even down in our way at Firehouse
yeah,
Liquor
yeah, I think,
in Dundas.
I think Burnick's just recently started yep. distributing for us down in the Rochester, Northfield yep. area.
So I know I've picked you guys up. Good stuff for sure. So you're a co-owner and marketing director. So what do you do in that capacity?
Oh, you know, I joke that I make things pretty. So I'm the one who designs the cans. And
well, they are pretty cans.
Well, thank you. Brian makes the beer pretty. I make the can pretty. TJ is
just
our third partner. TJ is pretty in his own
yeah.
right. Yeah.
Counselor at large, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I try to deal with a little more of the marketing side and some of the business side and often get wrangled into doing some of the events upstairs and things like that. So, you know, I just try to put a nice little gloss on everything that goes out the door and try to build our brand over the course of time.
Sure. And you alluded to the space. It's a beautiful space. You've been here about 2 years. It has maybe somewhat of a notorious backstory. Why don't you talk about where you guys started with about 5 years ago? How you ended up here and where you're at now?
Well, we started about 5 years ago up at 2nd and 2nd, so we made a large transition of
not
a block
far.
And a half.
Yep.
But we were in an old Gold Cross ambulance bay, and we were a very small production brewery at that moment in time. We were 4 feet too close to a church to have a tap room in that
on.
Space.
Oh, my.
Not to say it would have been a glorious tap room anyway. It was an old ambulance bay. But, you know...
Leftover Band-Aids or anything? Because you might need those in the brewery occasionally. Right?
You know, we never really dug through the air filters, but I'm sure there was some interesting things in it.
Oh,
it was a great place to start, and we kind of originally we got our start with a Kickstarter we did mm-hmm. where we kind of occupied the space alongside DeBrew, which mm-hmm. Brian is friends with the folks who started that. They all worked at Fitgers before then. So that's how we kind of really got our feet wet and, you know, first flag in the ground of, hey, let's try to be a brewery was a Kickstarter campaign that we kind of did a beer of the month sort of mechanism. And a lot of those recipes we actually have refined into what we serve today. The Eau de Belgique or ODB was, you know, our February of a year of beers offering. So We still are inspired by our time doing that. And, you know, back in this facility, we focus more on cans, just the marketability of the cans, the scalability, the cost effectiveness. You know, glass is expensive. It weighs a lot.
Yeah.
It sells a lot slower. So we really focused on cans when we got to this new location. But over the holiday season, we were able to release some special releases and kind of return to that period of time of when we were in the 750s. Instead of corked and caged, which at that moment in time, we were bottle conditioning everything. So those cages, they were not for decoration.
No.
They held the pressure in.
Yep.
So now we have our process a little more refined so that we can cap and wax. You know, our brewers always love the aesthetics of wax, and so have I. So,
so pretty,
it was fun
right?
to
pain
fun
in the ass to get off, though.
Yeah, well, you know, these are beers that aren't supposed to come out very frequently. Yeah. So if you're popping too many in one night, you might question why, you know.
That knife gets sharp after a while.
Yeah.
And that's not commentary just on you guys alone. That's just that's an industry-wide deal. We're like, well, we're going to try to get this one off, and best of luck. So working backwards, next question will be about starting the brewery itself. But obviously you had to transition this place. There was a need to move. Was it just the business had grown enough, or you guys want to have that tap room space?
Well, you know, we really feel that the presence of a tap room is kind of the heart and soul and adds to the culture of the place.
Sure.
And is a lot to do with its identity. And we always wanted that from the beginning. But we also were brewing at a extremely small scale back then at 80-gallon batches.
Okay.
So as we were growing and we had moved down to the cities, and, you know, to make the switch over to cans and make it a little bit more accessible and the market, it was something that had to be done. You know, we were approached by a gentleman, Brian Forsier of Titanium Partners, and he had had this eye on this building and was really looking for someone who could be an anchor tenant and help put some sweat into reviving the space and renovating it. It was kind of a notorious black mark on this area of downtown. So we really jumped at the opportunity to not only get our own space for developing our identity and culture, but, you know, rectifying something that should have been an asset to the community and wasn't. So all these downtown buildings, we really want to make sure that they have, you know, someone using them and something healthy for the community happening in them.
So how quickly into the process of opening the business did you realize we need to get into that tap space? Was it in year one immediately and then you start looking for places?
Well, no. I mean, because of how we started out really slow. And we've always had the goal of kind of doubling every year. And we've more or less maintained that standard. But, you know, when you're at 80-gallon batches, you got to make a bigger jump than just doubling to get into a canning scenario. So, you know, a lot of our time at the old place was a lot more passion project than it was fulfilling career. And, you know, as we wanted to grow, we wanted to be able to pay ourselves and expand and, you know, develop a business that wasn't just a hobby.
Sure. Wait, so for money? Really?
Money?
I think that gets lost sometimes in these conversations, and it's not meant to be a negative thing. Like, these are businesses. It has to make sense financially that you're not just doing this for the fun of it.
Well, and, you know, the amount of time that we've spent in it now, it's a good chunk of our adult life, so it's got to be heading in the direction of a career. Otherwise, you got to look elsewhere.
It becomes an expensive hobby otherwise.
It becomes a way too expensive hobby.
So this place had been, the place we're sitting in today, had been a black mark. We don't need to talk much more about that, but what have you guys done to revitalize this space? Because looking around, you got the beautiful exposed brick, you've got the nice flooring, not original hardwood, I'm guessing, but nice space all around.
Yeah, you know, the way it was set up, it was absolute gut the whole
squalor
thing sort of scenario. And between us and the building developer, Titanium Partners, you know, we tried to go all the way back down to the exposed brick and make it as big and open and modern of a space as we could. You know, the stairway and whatnot for the elevator and the stairway were a necessity.
So talking about the entrance.
The entrance.
I think that's kind of cool. I mean, it's not a direct entrance. You kind of have to take a left to get in.
Yeah.
But I think that's kind of character.
You know, given the narrowness of the storefront, it was kind of a requirement because the stairways had to be fire up to fire code and whatnot.
And fire, yeah.
So they're really little buildings within buildings, and when you have a smaller building, you just got to go that way. Excuse me. But we tried to make a kind of a warm, but unpretentious space. Yeah. And
I think it's cozy.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I know we've both been here. Ira and I have both been here before, and I know we both enjoyed our time here. And we're here on a cloudy December afternoon, so it's already a little dim outside, but the lighting in here is nice. We got the Edison bulbs and some other lighting in here, and it's a good crowd in here. And
it's very reminiscent of some of my favorite kind of places to go. For whatever reason, I love the long, narrow aspect.
You feel like you belong here.
Well, right? Yeah, it gives the coziness, kind of like, you know, you get a little bit of echo of people talking and everything else, but, you know, there's a couple of great places that I just love that kind of aspect to it and stuff. And it's a beautiful bar. I'm probably going to change the subject just briefly, but is there a story behind the Pennies, or is it just the ability to do... So as I asked the question, basically behind the whole bar, it's a, I don't know, what would that be, about 5 foot by 6 or 8 foot, all glazed over Pennies, and just wondering what the story behind that is, if there is one.
Well... I've always that was my choice in my project to kind of tackle, and I really just love the warm tones that copper puts off, and I had seen the aesthetic some places over in Europe, and really thought let me give it a go. So there's about 15,000 pennies up there.
Cheap investment, right?
Yeah.
An investment of time.
a lot of investment of time.
Yeah.
Trials and tribulations to figure out the process to do it and whatnot. And, you know, it's a vertical surface, so we didn't want it super glossy. Sure. So it's actually, you know, a pretty thin layer of sealant on it. So it just kind of seems like a little more aged penny than, you know, super, super glossy. You know, the other aspect is it's kind of bordered by some dark, like, Federalist-style cabinetry, which, you know, in breweries, everything's sanitizable. Everything's got to be up to Department of Ag code. So,
sure.
Having that, being able to bring that warmth into something that still meets that was something that we put a little bit of effort into.
So take me back before the Kickstarter days. Like, what were those conversations like that led to, hey, we've got an idea, let's open a brewery? Because that, you know, there's only 150 in the state, and I say only, like, kind of somewhat facetiously, but it's not like everyone's opening a brewery. What led you guys, like, hey, we can do this, we should do this?
Well, you know, we had it in the back of our minds since college. So in the 2004-ish era, Brian, you know, got a start with...
Brian, your brewer.
Brian Schanzenbach, the brewer, the head brewer, founding brewer, whatever you want his title to be.
Just
for the day.
Keep giving him adjectives, yeah. Right?
The magic unicorn.
His ego
brewer.
Will do okay,
yeah.
Right?
He got his first taste of brewing over at Lake Superior with Dale, and kind of fell in love and, you know, focused his college career towards microbiology, specifically knowing that he really enjoyed brewing as a combination of both science and art.
Sure.
So it really was a good draw for him. And he ended up working at Fitker's Brewhouse for quite a few years in there and then went to the Siebel Institute.
Little known place around here, right?
Yeah, a little known place. Yeah. You know, with that guy, Dave, you know, Dave Hoops.
I hear they have food, right?
No. Yeah, they do stuff. Dave has since started Hoops Brewing over...
Of course.
Over around here. Are you guys going there?
Yeah, you can listen to this interview in 2 weeks with Dave Hoops.
Okay.
So that's our last stop in the Duluth tour.
And you may remember us talking to Dave at All Pines North.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Episode number 41, I'm just guessing. Somewhere around there. I like guessing at episode numbers.
So Brian and a lot of brewers around here's kind of roots lead back to the brew house with Dave.
Sure, of course.
And everybody. So at that moment in time, beer was... We could easily, you know... Freshly 21, we could easily have tried every beer on the shelf, right?
Coors Light, New Belgium, right?
Coors Light, New Belgium,
maybe Sam Adams,
some Blue Moon in there too. But we could easily go to the liquor store and say, "What's the new beer?" And there'd be one, and right. We would try it. So we could literally go into Big Top Liquors down in the cities.
I'm sorry, for some reason, Michelob Ultra Light came to mind when you said, "Hey, what's the new beer?"
Well, yeah. We were looking more towards exploring like European beers. So it's the new import beer.
Makes sense.
So Winey's Honey Vice didn't meet the exoticness.
You know, we had tried it, and that was check it off the list. You know,
the German inspired beer for sure.
German inspired.
Yeah. So, and this is funny because we're going to get to kind of the ethos of what you guys do here shortly. But
So during that era, you weren't really hit with the variety and the craftsmanship that you are today. Mm-hmm. So we aspired to be something within that you hadn't had, the new beer on the shelf that really gives you a different definition of beer. We had been exposed to sour reds and sour browns and a few other things that we really felt were A, underrepresented, and B, really expanded people's notions of what beer could be. So we look back at that and say that's probably what drove us to want to start a brewery, is to share some of those lesser-known beer experiences. There was room for it. You know, and that kind of led to some of our decisions heading towards some of the Belgian styles and whatnot. Now we like to say we're more European-inspired, because when we start to look at our list, it's, you know, there's Belgians there for sure, but we still, you know, want to make sure that we have other styles represented. And Brian, you know, has a pretty big passion for wheat beers and German beers as well, so he doesn't want to be, no one wants to put Brewer Brian in the corner.
Don't put him in the corner. Well, I was going to ask, because my earliest...
You call him baby then?
I don't, but
and I will not.
I will let his wife refer to him however he needs.
So my earliest exposure to you guys were more the Belgian side beers, and obviously maybe you've expanded a little bit to the European style ales, and you touched on it a little bit now, but like in conception, focusing on that kind of type of style versus actually following through on it, why was it important for you guys to embrace that? Because it's a risk, right? If you're not doing big American hop ales or big stouts, like,
well,
you guys...
for us originally, it was a way to make our 80 barrel, or I mean 80 gallon production work out.
Sure.
You know, we're talking. The big new craze when we first started producing was to have your bomber wall, you know, in your liquor store.
Bombers. So, I haven't heard that term in a while.
Well,
now,
you know,
which
and
is funny, right?
We do 750s, not right. Bombers. Bombers,
which
are
22, a lot of people conflate the two, right?
Exactly.
But the idea of those bottles, period, now seem like an afterthought almost with everyone going to cans. I think
the transition to cans was kind of happening. On the craft level, it was happening a little after we started going that direction. But again, you know, to can, it's economies of scale. It's, you know, we are even a small canning facility now with a 20-barrel system. So it's, it was partially out of necessity, and also out of, we wanted to brew beer that was a new experience for people. Like, if all you did was just come home with one of our beers and it was just another day, then it wasn't a special beer. What'd we accomplish?
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, the landscape has changed so much, and we've had to grow and adapt kind of with it and try to make the business side of it work out. But we still try to adhere to the provide something different.
So Blacklist name kind of ties back to... the original Belgian influence, right? So Blacklist Arsenales is kind of born from that, right?
Yep. The name Blacklist, whether we've never actually gotten any confirmation that they're true or not, so we always say it's a brewer's wise tale.
Yeah, tell what you want. Right? Build your own narrative.
Right. That some of the bigger, you know, pre-World War II breweries, they didn't have all the sophisticated sanitization and everything that we have now. So the brewers themselves, they come in contact with whatever yeast, whatever they're using as a fermenting agent. So if you were a Belgian brewer, you came in contact with Brettanomyces and you know, lacto and all sorts of other crazy things that a normal mainstream brewery wants nowhere near their facility. So you would literally be blacklisted from going into a big bud plant or a big whatever manufacturing plant before the fear of infection. So literally all the cool kids were blacklisted.
Sure.
Yeah.
So it's a badge of honor then.
Yeah.
It's a badge of honor. I'd never heard that story. That's almost an interesting terroristic warfare that you could do.
Well, it's amazing what you can learn on reading brewery websites. I don't mean that toward you specifically, but like when people go to brewery websites, okay, what's their hours? What's their current tap list?
Right.
Like sometimes people actually put information on there. So it's amazing what you can learn just by reading the About Us page or find out about our leaders or kind of thing. So
I'm just thinking of sabotaging, like, you know, going in.
It's a science experiment. Every time you brew and...
Well, I mean, life is a science experiment.
Well, sure, but every time you introduce something new or different, you run the risk of infection, especially with the yeast.
And I feel like nowadays we're capable of dealing with it a little bit.
Sure, you have control somewhat.
And the chemicals are a little more consistent. Everything is just more consistent.
And knowledge is power. You have an idea of how to actually handle it now.
Yep. So we did recently release a Brettanomyces sour, and we can confidently do so and know that the rest of our beer is fine.
So I want to touch on the beer here. Next question. We've got a layout in front of us, but what have you guys learned in 5 years of operation? Obviously, what you guys did day one probably has changed a little bit to what you're doing now in year five. What have you guys learned from consumer input, from your own taste, from growing the business itself in terms of the beer?
Well, we learned that it is very hard to always stay ahead of the pack,
sure.
You know, to always come up with that new beer. So that experience of always being different has turned to always being us, you know, always trying to put face on it that that is consistent. So, yeah, we make an West Coast IPA, but it's slightly different than others.
Spain's West Coast? Is that what you're talking
about? Yeah, sure. We're Spanish.
Which West Coast?
We have an unofficial sister brewery and Black Lab over in Barcelona.
There you go.
The owner there is originally from Duluth, and last time we were over in Barcelona, we stopped in and kind of shook hands. They were actually just in town last week, so over Thanksgiving. So that's one thing we learned is you be you, make your beer, and try to communicate what you are to folks. And that's a tall task in its own right. I'm the marketing guy, so I know it's a tall task.
You hear that stuff, right?
Yeah.
So you get that feedback in the first 3 years when you guys are strictly on shelves and tap accounts, but now you got people in your face who are talking to your beer tenders, talking to you guys as owners.
Yeah.
Does that get kicked up a notch then with that feedback and trying to respond to commentary?
Yeah, you know, the vast, vast, vast majority is positive feedback.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there's whenever you put out something unique, there's going to be some ne'er-do-wells who have an opinion about it. But I think Duluth in general is a relatively polite town, so vast, vast majority is good interactions with folks. You know, we are right downtown, so there's things we're learning about simply just being a drinking establishment in downtown of a regional center sort of community that I didn't think I would know.
Growing up in Brainerd.
Well, and it has obviously, you know, established population, but then you have the, we'll call it migrant population of age students, and then, of course, a tourism industry that's probably rather unique in compared to a lot of areas. That Duluth tourism, while it's very big, is actually pretty kind of a unique thing in itself, just because of people coming up, whether it be just to visit Duluth or swinging through on their way up to the cabin or camping
just
or whatever.
Just to see one ship.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the ships and everything else. I mean, it's a really, I mean, I love coming up here, but it's a completely from a different tourism standpoint than anywhere else I go. And, you know, so that has to be interesting to adapt to that kind of a clientele.
Oh, it is a challenge. I mean, I think Duluth as a whole considers it a challenge. There's a lot of organizations around here that really put a lot of effort into helping and aiding that with that sentiment in mind. Visit Duluth being the big one in the room. So it is a challenge, and every year it's a crapshoot. How's the weather going to be? Because that's how the tourism is going to be. How much snow came? When did it come? How fast did the leaves fall? All these
flood
factors.
but
yeah,
each one of those actually
think, flood.
Yeah.
But that's the interesting thing about it is I think each one of those has a different fan that's interested.
Yep.
Like you know, today there's supposed to be some gale force winds on the lake, and my wife's mad that she's not here because that to her is more interesting than you know, a nice calm day. She wants to see the you know, 10-foot wave or something like that. You know,
when there's surfers, Duluth has surfers. Yeah, those are the days they come out.
Yep.
It was cold. There's shrinkage.
Yep.
That kind of bit.
But I mean, I think
they had their suits. Yeah.
Well, good call.
Because it has so many unique weather and other things, I think it does have fans of all the different parts of it, which really does make it more of an interesting tourist destination, where most people going to Florida aren't going there for hurricane season.
Yeah. You
know? I mean, it is interesting because we talk about different dynamics of, especially in breweries and cities, where you have to please more than one master. And when we say that, we often mean two masters. But given Duluth and the culture here and the people who come here, you've got like seven masters. Like you,
Yeah.
Who do you play to, right? Is it the beer snob? Is it the people coming to see ships? Is it someone coming for grandmas? Is it...
Is it college students? Is it residents? Yeah. Is it tourists? Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Is it the Blues Festival or the, you know, all the rest of
it? Or it's a family from Bentleyville. Yeah. They walked by and like, oh, here's a brewery. Let's check it out.
Yep.
So it's got to be an interesting scenario for you guys.
It is. It's constantly keeping on our toes. Every month is different. And what works one month won't necessarily work the next month. So we constantly come back to that playbook of what do we think defines us? What do we desire to project in the community? And where's our niche? You know, because we're also, it's Duluth. We're not the big dogs in the beer brewing world either. So how do we find our niche? How do we find our fan base? And how do we continue to, you know, allow our brewer platform to do things that, you know, we put on par with art, hence the artisan ales.
Start with quality product, which I think you guys have succeeded with. I was telling you before we got going here about my experience with the Spruce Tip IPA years ago, back when it was still being bottled and had the cork and cage and the whole bits. And when I talk about Duluth beer, I bring you guys up a lot with respect to that beer specifically and just the experience I had with it and how I enjoyed it. I'm happy to see you guys still have it. I've had it in cans now. Back then it was bottles. I'm having it on tap now. Would you tell us a little bit about the beers in front of us and how you focus on what you're putting out?
Well, you know, given that we do have a tap room, we always try to have something interesting and seasonal on tap in regards to, you know, a fruit beer or something. You know, one way that we really differentiate our fruit beers is they are fermented fruit, so very rarely do we have a sweet fruit beer. You know, some of the infusions and things that kind of come out on a much smaller basis for a festival or whatever, they can have a sweeter disposition. But the cranberry has been there from our very beginning. That was our December release in our Kickstarter. And that's a strong Belgian golden fermented with about a pound. Well, this is one thing that has changed is we used to try to use the earmark of a pound per gallon of fruit. We found with cranberries and 600-gallon batches that's, you know...
A little different.
A little different. So I think right now we're looking at more about 400 pounds into that batch. But Brian is constantly kind of adjusting that up and down based on a lot of different variables. So that's one that's been with us from the beginning, and it's a perennial favorite. It usually comes out across... around New Year, so it's our champagne alternative. So
yep, so this will be available if you come up after this.
It's crisp. It's a very nice flavor.
And our New Year's toast is this beer. So we
smells great.
Pour four flutes for everybody and have a good time.
Yeah, out of the beers right now, I think this would probably be my wife's favorite just because she's a big cranberry fan, really enjoys a fruit beer. And this has a really nice flavor. It still goes with the Belgian style, obviously, and I definitely like it.
It's got the champagne element to it, for sure.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
And the cranberry definitely carries through. Very nice.
You know, so we try to let it ferment out nice and dry to kind of go with that. It's also a little higher octane. Comes in at 9, 10, depending on the year.
Yeah, looking at your board, you got a few up that way.
Yeah.
But maybe it's the time of year, right?
It's the time of year, yeah. And some of them are our seasonal releases of, like, Imperial Stouts for... Like I said, we got we were able to go back to 750s for this holiday season. So those are those beers as well.
It's the greatest time of the year. I love me some of those bottled
beers. Yeah. Very limited quantity. So if you see
So if you're listening to the show and you want to send us some beer, send us some bottles. Sorry to cut you off.
Yep, no, that's good.
But I'm going to solicit free beer. If you want to send us some beer, P.O. Box. No, we should get a P.O. Box.
That'd be a little weird, but...
No, maybe we'll get some beers. I watch these YouTube videos where people get stuff sent to them all the time, and all they do is ask for it, so maybe we should start asking for it. All right, I'm sorry. Back to the important stuff here, the beer.
Yeah. I'm picturing what people are going to ask for, and I don't want to say it out loud. So.
Jeez. I'm talking about, like, video game YouTube channels.
So that's the first one, the cranberry. And then the spruce tip, like you mentioned. Since the bottle days, it's become a little less malty. Back then, we were on a direct fire system, so it caramelized a little bit more. Mm-hmm. It's not meant to be it's meant to be more of an English pale ale than it is a West Coast pale ale. So it's meant to have a little more of the malt to kind of back up, you know, all the other crazy that goes on.
So do the spruce tips replace just some of the hops, or there's still hops in the beer?
There's still a lot of hops in the beer.
A lot of hops.
Yeah.
Because... back in the day, like a long time ago, some beers were brewed entirely with like spruce tips, right? In place of hops, where they couldn't get them.
And so,
use them in concert with each
other.
We
use it in concert with each other, and we try to match it with some noble hop varieties that help emphasize that kind of pininess or
nice
earthiness.
English hop, right?
Yeah. It is since become a little crisper, a little more Americanized, But as our ability to control the maltiness level and the caramelization level has come about, we've switched over to hops that have a little more citrus to it and let the spruce kind of brighten it up a little bit more. And, Brian, every once in a while, Brian will get an email from a fellow brewer who says, I don't know, how do you brew this? I put the spruce in the kettle, and now the sap's everywhere. That's not a spruce tip. If it was a branch, it is not a spruce tip anymore. It's like a fiddlehead fern. There's a certain period of time when you can pick it, and it's very tender and light green, and those are when you want it. You don't want it by the time it's got a big branch in the middle with sap in it. Then it's no. That's just a spruce branch. That's not a spruce tip.
Most cases with brewing, it comes down to timing, right?
Yep. So we got to collect those in the spring. And then,
are you the ones out there gathering it yourselves, or is there a company that provides
locally
them,
sourced?
Locally sourced. Yeah. We have a gentleman named Josh who has helped us out dramatically the last couple years. Prior to that, it was us out there picking 100 pounds a year.
That's worst things you could be doing.
No, this is
usually we had a little fun, luncheon and festival, and everyone kind of went out and picked it at our buddy's farm. But you know, we've ramped it up since then. So we need bigger and bigger quantities, and you want to see how little time you have start a brewery. So
has this grown in ABV then? Because I remember back when I had in bottles the IPA at the board, it looks like it's the Imperial IPA.
It's always been an Imperial, so it's always rocked in about 9.5.
So as the marketing guy, you just, mislabeled it? No, I'm just joking.
I'm not sure if it was.
Back then.
I think some days it was called the double IPA.
Okay. I don't remember it being double or Imperial, and I don't really care. I'm just joking. But I remember it just being the spruce tip IPA. But I don't remember
and
it being this big.
It went through a couple iterations of labels. Okay. One that was the Kickstarter one, and then one that was for the market and whatnot. So it's hard for me to recall back to what label
you're
referring to.
You got a couple iterations.
Yeah.
I'm just giving you crap. That's
I know.
All right, what else we got here?
Then we got the dark, which is a Belgian Imperial Stout. Long story short, Brian made this recipe based on recipes he found that were Belgium's response to Guinness Special Export. As Guinness was kind of invading the mainland... Yeah. The Belgians were like, well, us too. So this is a while ago. So it's not a style that is, you still see it, but it's not a style that was new when we made it. It's a style that is in response to stouts becoming more popular across the board.
What's the name of this one?
It's just called Dark.
Belgian Imperial Stout.
Yep.
So it's not like a style that I'm really that familiar with. So there can't, like you said, it's not like something you guys created, but There can't be that many, at least stateside, right?
No, I don't think there are. You know, the we get a lot of people saying, well, what makes a beer Belgian? Well, you use Belgian yeast strains, the difference of that you get from a Belgian yeast strain, you get more fruity notes, a little more esters. It ferments at a higher temperature.
Bubblegum.
So it gets a little more, bubblegum. You know, with phenols and whatnot. It ferments at a higher temperature, so a little more volatiles in there. So over the course of time, it has kind of gotten lost that's usually the definition of what a Belgian beer is. It's fermented at a higher temperature with a Belgian yeast strain.
So do you guys find, we got one more beer here we want to talk about, but do you guys find that you do a lot of education, though, when people come in here and are like, well, what's a Belgian IPA versus just an IPA? Because the yeast clearly makes a different. A huge difference. It changes the flavor on what you're experiencing. Do you find that you need to tell people ahead of time if they're unfamiliar with the Belgian style beer of what they should expect?
You know, everyone kind of walks in here with their own level of what they want to engage with and how deeply they want to engage with it. So whenever anyone's willing to listen, we'll tell them, you know, everything about everything. But a lot of times people kind of come in and, you know, order the Belgian based because they like Belgians, but they don't necessarily inquire to what effect or why they
specific
like that.
Style,
yeah. So, you know, we have a West Coast IPA sitting right next to a Belgian IPA. And a lot of people, if they're not really paying attention, probably go, well, slightly different, but not that different. Well, that's the Belgianese. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's someone for the first time, like anything, if they have a beer that's hoppier than they're expecting. This beer is going to taste different than what you've never, you've never had it. So I think like most things, you just need to encourage people to try things more than once because it's something you may have to warm up to. Not anything specific to you guys, but just that Belgian yeast clearly carries a different character to it.
And you know, to us it's a welcome flavor.
Sure.
And I think even the notion that beer should be drank cold, 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 cold. The only reason you need to drink beer cold, 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 cold is when it doesn't taste good.
And to kill your taste buds.
So good beers should have flavor, and they don't
There's a reason there's marketing around that, right? Ice cold mountains.
That's right.
I find when I ice fish, I hardly drink any beer because I'm usually drinking cheap crap beer. I'll drink like 2 beers in 8 hours because you're just it's like it's cold. It's not enjoyable. Like, what am I drinking? I might as well be drinking water.
Well, and ice fishing, you need to get the hard alcohol, right, to keep you warm.
Well, we do drink Fireball, so I should dismiss that. But on the beer side of it, it's like I'll realize I've had like 3 beers and like during the daylight. It's like, oh, guess I didn't drink that much today. Guess I'm the one driving back.
And there's a time and place for all that kind of beer. And I will say, fishing in the summer is definitely one of
them.
You know. But we really try to focus on beer that is balanced.
The rhubarb
but full flavor
in the summer, I bet.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Good. Yeah, that's your summer fishing beer.
Yeah. We have another one, a single, that works really well, too. That's a nice low alcohol, you know, goes into that direction.
So as we wrap up here, you kind of alluded to you guys aren't necessarily one of the big dogs here in the Duluth scene, but clearly a very prominent and growing scene of craft brewers here in Duluth. I think we've said in previous shows, and we haven't counted necessarily, but I think I have in my head about 8 in Duluth proper. And you've got just across the water there with Earth Rider. You've got just up the lake with a number of them. So 8 here, though, in Duluth proper. What's that mean to you guys as far as community? I mean, people clearly come here just to do brewery tourism, but also it's a business, so you want to make sure you stand out. Like, in terms of the culture and the community of Duluth when it comes to brewing, where do you guys see yourself?
You know, we've kind of carved out our niche focusing on the type of beers we do. You know, the other folks around, obviously Ben Paddle, you know, has a decent chunk of IPAs, and they put out some seasonals and whatnot, and they're kind of the big dogs around here. And then up the shore we have Castle Danger, and those are the two bigger entities. The smaller ones, you know,
Earth Rider. In terms of distribution, for sure.
In terms of distribution. Yeah. And, you know, we're actually middle of a pack because we do distribute on a decent scale. So we're not the big dogs, but we're also not the small dogs either. We find our spot in trying to offer those slightly different experiences or more... we don't want to say we focus on beer nerds specifically, because that's not necessarily what we do, but we try to put the effort and finesse that that would be appreciated by such folks.
Is it fair to say with like the Belgian slant though, it's a little bit of acquired taste, right? At least initially, and then hopefully you get people hooked and they're going to grow into your brand.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we the Hors de Belgique, that is one of our great kind of hook to our brand beers. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people these days are actually saying, "Hey, I don't really like hops."
Sure.
Super, yeah. A lot. So the Hors de Belgique is a perfect perfect beer for them to introduce them to the Belgian side of the world. our bartender Zach over there claims it's the perfect beer. So
when folks want to check out what's going on with you guys with Blacklist, either if they're planning to come up here and want to see what you guys have going on in distribution, where should they head online?
Blacklistbeer.com.
Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, those
Facebook,
places
Twitter,
as well. You're everywhere.
Yeah, Facebook more so than Twitter. And on the website, it has the current hours and when we're open. And I guess it has that all over the place, too, now. Google as well. So
The Google, as we like to say. Go to the Google. Search Blacklist Our Snails.
Yeah.
John, thanks so much.
Well, thank you very much.
Yep. Cheers.
Hey, it's Andrew Burns, and for this style of the week, we are talking about vanilla. That's right, we're going to Vanilla Porter. You know, like the name suggests, this beer starts out life as a regular, ordinary porter. Usually this is an American interpretation of a porter, which means a little bit stronger, usually, you know, above 5% alcohol, and pretty darn dark, although it doesn't have the coffee characteristic of, say, a stout. So we take that base beer, you know, medium strength, lots of dark, roasty, caramely flavors, maybe a hint of chocolate, and infused vanilla. Now, some brewers also at that step add some lactose or milk sugar, which adds a sweetness to a beer. So we can have vanilla porters that are quite sweet and creamy, or vanilla porters that are more middle of the road and without that creamy sweetness, but still have the vanilla kick. Now, this is an example of what brewers have been doing forever, which is finding new ingredients and finding new ways to doctor up and change and reinterpret old styles. And it takes a traditional British style and adds a twist to it.
That's going to put a wrap on this show. Thanks to John at Blacklist Artist Nails for hosting us for episode number 51. Had a great time visiting his downtown space, he and his partners, and their great space and their wonderful beer. Really cool space. Ira, what'd you think?
Well, I liked it. I'd had a chance to pop in there once right at the end of All Pints North last summertime, but we were a little...
A short 6 months ago.
Yeah.
Seems so long ago now here in the middle of winter, right?
And it was a little busy and a little hectic because of All Pints North, so getting a chance to actually sit down and talk a little more about what they're trying to do and everything else. Definitely enjoyed the space and kind of like the little bit of a historic reference to the building, which as much as it's not that far in the past, kind of a big historical point. So never thought I'd be in that spot for a brewery.
Yeah, they've done great work with it. It's a beautiful space. I had one brief visit there. I was up there maybe a year and a half ago, I guess summer before last, and grabbed some samples to bring down the show, but didn't have enough time to stop in and actually enjoy a beer. You know, family obligations, things of that nature.
Of course.
Well, you know, you got youngins, and that's the way it works. So it was nice to actually sit in there and enjoy for a while. And it was a cozy early December day. I was going to say late November, but early December day and a little chilly. So it was nice to escape inside and have a good conversation, have some tasty beer. And they're doing a lot of fun stuff there. So good job to them, and keep up the good work. And definitely a visit people should make when they're in Duluth.
Well, I enjoyed their extra attention to doing a little spruce tips. And obviously,
I love the spruce tips.
Yeah, nowhere near an organic farm, but at least thinking about some things that they can get in the area and stuff. So I appreciate a brewery thinking about what they can do locally to add to what they're trying to do.
Yeah, a lot of respect for the process.
Yep.
So appreciate their time, John specifically, for giving us some time. And it was about an hour of chatting with us. And anyone who could make it through that is a pretty decent person. So that's going to be show number 3 of 4. We're doing 4 total Duluth shows. Obviously, if you're a consistent listener of ours, you know we've done interviews with Lake Superior Brewing and Bent Paddle Brewing. Today was Blacklist Arsenales. We'll be back in 2 weeks with Hoops Brewing. That's going to be 11 a.m. Saturday, February 2nd, with Dave Hoops of Hoops Brewing, a Canal Park Brewing. He has a long history of brewing, especially Minnesota, former head brewer at Fitger's Brewhouse, which I think a lot of people are familiar with for one reason or another. Great place, great beer, great food, great facility, just a great historic place. And Dave's carried a lot of that knowledge, clearly, and expertise over to his new place on Canal Park.
Yeah, and if anyone knows me, that Hoops Brewing is probably one of my favorite places to visit. I really love what Dave does with his beers, so you should tune in for this interview.
Should we call you a Hoopshead?
That might be an interesting
thing. That's pretty good, Hoopshead. Yeah.
Well, hey, if you call you a Hoopshead, you get to include his brother then, right? You know, so it's,
Mike Hoops of Town Hall Brewing in Minneapolis, and they've got a couple other facilities now where they have their beer at, has been doing outstanding things. If you ever talk to Dave and get to know Dave a little bit, even though he's kind of known as one of those godfathers of Minnesota brewing, he'll always defer to his brother as the better brother.
Well, so. And during the interview, he talks about his brothers and sisters. So yeah. I think there's a whole family movement there. But yeah, I think I'd clearly be in a Hoophead thing, like you talked about. Grateful Dead fans, I think they're Hoophead fans because the Hoops family is producing some pretty darn good beer.
Yeah, between Dave and Mike, you can't go wrong.
Yeah.
You've got Duluth and Minneapolis covered. So. And, you know, Dave, as he alluded to in our conversation that will air in 2 weeks, maybe gets a little more attention. He's a little more vocal, whereas Mike just wants to put his head down and do the work. They're both doing outstanding things. So we're all better for it, that's for sure. Those of us who participate in the brewing scene are better for having those two guys.
They're not passionate at all.
Yeah, not at all. Well, if you want to keep up with us, we appreciate that. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Search for On Tap Northfield. On any of those platforms, you can find photos and videos and updates about where we are and what we're doing. We like to use Instagram specifically, I think, for photo updates, but also Facebook and Twitter. So catch up on where we're at, what we're drinking, who we're seeing, all those good things. Facebook's a good spot to find out who's coming up on the show in the coming weeks. We've got to build that a little bit more into the spring, but you know we're working behind the scenes to get these guests in line. So we'll have a lot of fun conversations, I'm sure, come up here in March and April and into May even, because that's really not that far out now that you think about it.
Yeah, it's coming soon. We'll have
it's cold, but
I'm more than happy to sit in the porters and the stouts and enjoy some of these good winter beers right now, good IPA. But when the spring comes, I'll be ready for that Kolsch.
As Andy Williams has said multiple times, it's the most wonderful time of the year. This is my favorite time to be drinking beer. So head to those places to keep up with what we're doing. There's plenty to do there. If you're listening on 95.1 FM, 1080 KYMN Radio, we appreciate you listening there. You can catch our shows also on KYMNRadio.net or head to ontapnorfield.com. You can also get our shows there. Sometimes we have to trim down our shows for length for KYMN. We have an hour slot. Sometimes we go longer than an hour because we like to talk. I don't know if you've listened to us before, but I talk a lot. Ira can talk a lot. And occasionally these people we talk to, they talk a lot. So sometimes we go over that hour allotment. So ontapnorfield.com is a good place to catch those conversations or on podcast platforms like iTunes, Player FM, Google Play, iHeartRadio, or wherever you probably listen to podcasts. We'll probably show up on one of those. We're on most of those nowadays. Like I said, we'll be back in 2 weeks with Hoops Brewing. It's going to be a great conversation, really intimate conversation in the brew house. A lot of fun, good things to know. If you're going to end your 4-interview series on one person, Dave Hoops is about as best as you can go with Dave Hoops with Hoops Brewing. A lot of knowledge, a lot of experience, and a lot of good things to say. He's a great ambassador for the industry. So make sure you tune in 2 weeks. We'll see you then. Cheers.
Cheers.